Hey, it's Bob Baker here. Welcome to the latest episode of Artist Empowerment Radio. This time I'm going to be breaking with the regular format to bring you a longer interview that I did with David Neveu. He's been a full-time solo independent musician for a decade now, and he's got a lot of great advice to share. And I got on the phone with him for an hour last week, and I'm going to share a good chunk of that interview with you. This is actually part of a new series of interviews I'll be doing every month for members of my Music Marketing Mentorship Program. The full interviews will be available to members only, but I'm going to make good chunks of them available to the general public here on the podcast. So you'll be able to get a lot of benefit out of the free public versions that I'll put here on the podcast. But if you want the full enchilada, so to speak, and also access to a lot of other goodies that members get, I encourage you to check out the Music Marketing Mentorship Program. Just go to thebuzzfactor.com, and somewhere on that homepage there'll be a little image and a link to details about the program. So that's it, and here is my interview with David Neveu. Hello and welcome to another in a new series of interviews that I'm doing with successful independent artists and experts and authors all about how artists are taking advantage and making the most of this new era that we live in the digital age. My guest this time around is actually an old friend of mine. His name is David Neveu. David, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic. And I'm really excited about this interview because you pretty much are a living example of someone who exemplifies the stuff that I've been talking about for years. You're an independent artist, and you've been making a living for a number of years doing what you love. And so I know you've got a great story to tell. Before we dive into that, I just want to you and I actually have been connected for a number of years. We first actually met each other probably, I'm thinking, around 2003 in Nashville, when David Hooper used to do his music conference there. That was probably the first time that we met face-to-face, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think it was Nashville was when we first met. I remember hanging out and sitting together on a curbside just chatting about stuff outside this old church that had been turned into a live music venue.
Yeah, and that just goes to show you can turn any space into a live music venue. I know we're going to talk about some of those things here too, but yeah. So I remember that. But we had actually connected. And I was trying to remember before the call how far we actually go back, and I think it's actually we go back to the 90s, most of our early days of doing this stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that it's been that long at least. I mean, when I started the Music Academy website, I'm pretty sure it was like 98 anyway, and we probably met. Probably as a result of that, somehow connecting my publishing your articles or referencing your book or something. I mean, it's just hard to know. I can't remember exactly how we first hooked up.
Yeah, but yeah, it does go back in 98. I mean, we're talking about, yeah, those are the early years of the Internet. 98, I think, was the year that CD Baby first started, when Derek Sivers started that, and then I got online in 95, so we're talking about, yeah, in Internet ages, that's eons ago.
It is, and, you know, it's so funny because when we started, I mean, I started online in 95 was when I first started promoting my music online, and I remember back then, it felt like such a big, vast, you know, land, the cyberspace thing. It just seems so huge, but, you know, comparatively speaking, now we look back and it's just like, oh man, that was like, you know, a cave dwelling compared to what it is now.
Absolutely, there's so many opportunities. Well, let's, for those of you, so you and I go way back, and I know a lot about your story, and I know you're going to be revealing it here in this conversation. But for people who might not know, let's go back and just kind of anchor them in who you are as a musician, and kind of how you identify yourself, where you fit in the indie music world. So.
Well, just so folks know what I do, I'm a piano player, and I write my own original solo piano music, and that's what I do. So, you know, all years ago, I was just playing piano in coffee houses and in gigs I could arrange here and there, but not that much. I had a couple albums of my solo piano music, and that I was selling at my shows. And then this thing called the Internet happened, and I was working at a company called Symantec, a software company, when the Internet started to kind of happen. And I was right there when it all started. I was working in a technology firm, so it made it really easy for me to just jump on board and start promoting my music, and that's what I did.
Cool. Now, Samantha, I know not that we need to reference or go too deep in your old day job, but that's the company that makes, I guess, is it Norton Antivirus? Is that what they
Yeah, Norton Antivirus and Norton Internet Security, and that's pretty much what they're known for these days.
So I know a lot of people, do you think that it helped you, at least having a little background in the tech world? And I'm not sure if you were, if you worked with software there or what, but do you think that helped prepare you to embrace the internet early on, perhaps?
Well, I think it certainly did in terms of the exposure, because I know that if I was just working in the public sector at some other job not connected with software industry, I think that I would have been outside of the whole internet thing when it was happening, just like most people were, because I remember at that point in time, I was doing telephone support for software products, primarily PC Anywhere. And, during support calls, between support calls, we'd play around with all these little tools that would come out. And I can remember, when the first news groups things happened and everybody was posting on the news groups. And then I remember the first web browser when Mosaic came out, and we were all just dabbling on it and being right there in a software company. Whenever anything happened that was cool and neat, word spread throughout, the whole floor. Everybody was playing with it. And so I was there messing around, surfing the web, before any of my friends outside of work had really even knew what a web browser was or what the web was. So it definitely gave me a head start.
That you were plugged into the early adopter crowd, I guess.
Right? Yes, absolutely. And, it's one of those things you start experimenting and just having fun with it. And I put up a web page, pretty early. It was 95 when I started and put my web page up. And I had just released a new album, my second album, a solo piano music called While the Trees Sleep. And so I put up a web page with the album on it, and I had sound samples. They were like WAV files back then. I just had like little, 1 minute long snippets that I had on my, and I was trying to sell it. And back in those days, it wasn't near as easy to plug in shopping carts. There really wasn't anything available. So, we just had a little link with an order form that people could fill out and mail in to order the CDs.
Yeah, I remember that. My first 5 years, it wasn't until like 2000 that I actually had the ability to accept credit card orders online. I remember, it was basically an electronic version of mail order where they'd have to mail in their check. I mean, talk about the dinosaur ages. but that's how we use. But I guess that's a lesson here, is you use what tools are available to you. One of my favorite quotes is from Teddy Roosevelt. It's like, it's do what you can with what you have right where you are, and don't make excuses about, I don't have this or I don't have that. And just use what's right in front of you and make the best use of it. It sounds like both of us have embraced that attitude over the years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was fun. And in those days, I don't think that I or probably even you had any illusions of, being able to make lots and lots of money with it. At that time, it was just kind of a hobby. It was another way to get my music out there, but the internet was such a vague notion back in 95 that, when I first started, just getting any orders to the website was just like, wow, this is really cool. I can actually sell some music.
Right. And I know even though my career path, I am a musician and continue to play part-time, but I practice what I preach, and the same techniques that I recommend that musicians use, I've used to promote my, reputation and spread my message as a music marketing resource. But it sounds like knowing what I do about your story, that this build is kind of a slow. It's not a quick fix process. And I think both of us sort of grew slowly as we got more comfortable with it, reached more people. Is that a fair thing to say? Also.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a slow process. I think even today it's a slow process, and I think musicians need to understand that it takes a long time of persistent hard work and effort to build an income and to build a career online. And the reason for that is because, there's only so much that you can sell, especially when you're first starting out, and you know, when I first started online, I just had, I had my two albums to sell, and that's all I had to sell. And then, of course, in those days, we didn't have, you know, iTunes or anything, so it was just the CDs. You need to start by building the product, by developing the product that you have and marketing it. And what I did is I simply saved up anything that I had, any money that I made from my music online or playing shows in person, any money that I made from my music, I put into a separate account. I didn't use it as personal income to live off of. I saved that money up so that I could create more product. So when I had enough money saved up to do a third album, then I would go and do my third album. And then I had three albums that I could sell and market online, which increased the amount of revenue that I was able to bring in, because my fans, the fan base that I was developing online, now had three albums that they could find. And when new people found my music, they would more often than not purchase all three albums, or at least two of the three. And so it gives you, you know, a bigger price point that you can come in on, because people are going to spend more money buying your music. And then I just kept on kind of rolling that over. I'd make money online or doing my shows, and then save that music up, save that money up, build, work in, use it to create more product. The more product that you have, the more money you have coming in, the more potential sales you have, save that money up. And it got me to a point to where, you know, by the time I got to my fourth album, as soon as I released that album, I had a fan base big enough that I was able to sell out my first 1,000 copies pretty quickly and use that money to immediately go in the studio and record some more. So it takes a while to get going, because when you have just one album, that's all you have to sell. But if you invest that money and save it and build up a product line, it gives you a lot more that you can market. And then you have people coming to your website, you know, and dropping $100 on your product just like that. So Right. That makes a big difference.
And so the more products that you have, you expand your line of products, the more you can make special offers to bundle them or package them together and offer discounts, you know, and you create incentives for people to spend a little bit more if that's what they want, you know, if they really want to get a big dose of your music. But,
yeah, exactly, and that's the philosophy that I've used on my website. Marketing is basically the more you buy, the less it costs per item, kind of the Costco mentality of trying to get, you know, the best deal that you can get.
Right.
And so that's worked really well for me.
Cool. I think we should mention another reason I'm glad what we're doing. We've been talking about doing this type of interview for a while now, but the timing is really spectacular, because I don't know if we've actually clearly mentioned in this interview yet, but you years ago authored a book that's been regularly updated over the years, and it is called the I'm guilty of having some wordy titles, but yours is How to Promote Your Music Successfully on the Internet. Is that the correct?
Yes, and it is a wordy title, I know, but you know, Everything that I write, I'm always thinking of the search engines, and so
right, and it clearly explains what it is and what you're going to get out of the book.
I could have just titled it How to Promote Your Music on the Internet, but anybody can do that. It's how you promote your music successfully on the Internet. That's the hard thing to
right.
do, so that's kind of why I have that jumble of words. I
oh,
know.
No.
It's mouthful.
No, not at all. It clearly, clearly tells you what it is. So and that book is all about your story and exactly the steps that you took, and I've read, you know, like I said, we've been kind of promoting each other's titles over the years, but I'm very familiar with your book, and I've always been impressed in how detailed it is and how thorough you are covering all the stuff and explaining how you do it, and all the many things that you've done. So the newest edition, you've just recently updated it and made that available for, I guess, the 2011 version, is that correct?
Yes, the 2011 edition. It came out just a month ago, and it was a very long time coming, and it was a big work in the making. I mean, the difference, the previous edition was the 2007 edition, and the reason it took me so long is just that I'm doing a lot more touring and traveling now, and once you get into that realm where you're on the road traveling for weeks at a time, it's just impossible to get any kind of real consistent work done on a book, and plus the internet changes so fast. I'd spend 6 months working on it, and then I'd feel like I have to start all over again to get it up to date again. So the way it took a long time to get it done, but it's the 2011 edition. I'm really proud of it. It's a huge leap forward from the 2007 edition. I mean, so much has changed in 4 years.
Very, very, very cool. And for people that are, there's no way of telling how people are listening to this audio, but if you're on the podcast page on my website, I'll have a link to David's book in the show notes. I know I'll also be blogging about it at musicpromotionblog.com. And again, if you're watching away from the computer on your phone or something, the podcast is at bob-baker.com/podcast, where you can check that out. It's just an awesome resource. And so we're going to be touching on some of the things that you personally have done to build your career and to make a living. And I remember, like I said, there are different milestones. I remember this us being in touch, but I remember getting an email from you some years ago where you were saying you finally reached that point where you were able to quit that day job that you had. I think you did this a couple years before I did it. But was that around what year was that when you said goodbye to the security of the day job?
It was 2001.
Oh, wow. Okay.
2001. And what I did, I kind of played it safe because you just never know with the internet. But I had reached a point in 2000 where I was making as much money online as I was making at my job. And so what I did was I spent another year at my day job at Symantec, and I saved up a year's salary. And then once I had a year's salary in the bank, then I put in my notice and quit my day job. I quit in November 2001. And my feeling at that point, I was thinking, you know, if I can keep this going and do what I really want to do for a couple of years, well, that's great. That's more than a lot of people get to do. But it's been 10 years now that I've been doing this music full time. And every year has been more successful than the previous year. So, I mean, it continues to grow. Despite all the people saying that music is dead and nobody buys music, you know, I just had in December my biggest month of sales ever for CDs. I sold over 1,000 CDs in a month from the internet, and that's, you know, I don't know. They say the CD is dead, but I'm still doing okay.
So that was strictly physical CD purchases?
Physical CDs in 1 month, yeah.
Wow, and in addition to that, I'm sure you had download sales and...
Downloads and royalties, and downloads are going fantastic. I mean, the thing is that, you know, CD sales, for me, CD sales are still on the increase, but I think a lot of that is because more and more people are finding me, so it seems like the word about my music is spreading at a faster pace than even what people are buying CDs. So the net result is I'm seeing an increase in CD sales as more people discover and find my music. But while all that is happening, the digital sales, you know, continue to increase as well. And, you know, I've been doing very, very well with the digital music sales through CD Baby. I've been very thrilled with that. That's just, it almost seems like easy money. I mean, it's not, but it's just, you know, it just appears in your account. It's just like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Which reminding me that, I mean, a lot of this, yeah, I mean, I like to take people's success stories and kind of break them down into principles that people can, you know, can wrap their brains around. It sounds like, and I know this is, you know, other people I've talked to in my own career too, it's like there's a lot of work that goes on in the early stages. In fact, I just posted something on Twitter today. It was a quote, something along the lines of, you got to take a lot of tiny actions over and over again early on that a lot of people don't notice or don't seem to be gaining traction or having an effect. But after a while, once you do gain some traction, it's almost if you've really got something that connects with fans and you can continue to do smart things to get the word out, it starts to snowball, and it becomes bigger than it's outside of you're having to manage everything, right?
And that's exactly true. I mean, I think the key, one of the biggest keys to success, and I really feel like this is true in this day and age where we live in 2011, with the industry just kind of feel everything you read makes it sound like the industry is on its last gasp, you know. And we live in this world where people can get any music they want pretty much any time without having to really pay for it. I mean, just Pandora, okay? That's just enough said right there.
Mm-hmm.
People can hear whatever they want to hear. So why in the world would somebody buy your music, you know? And that's the thing you have to kind of transcend, is you have to create music that your fan just loves, and you have to be able to make that connection with them so that somebody becomes, they feel compelled to purchase your music and to purchase your albums because they love it so much, and they feel compelled to share it. And that's what's happened with me. I'd say really, it started out early, but it's been snowballing. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And over the last 2 years, man, it's been awesome because, you know, I could have done nothing at this point, and my music continues to spread all over, and it's because people are using it in videos or creating videos with it. And lots of bloggers are using my music for their websites. And it's just like I've got all these evangelists out there that are promoting my music for me without even my having to ask. And the result is, because they're all talking about it and they're all sharing it and saying how much they love my music, people are finding it, they're coming in, they're checking it out, and they're buying it. So that's a key element, is getting to that point with your fans. That definitely makes it easier once you can reach that point.
Right. There's one thing that I've often over the years have used you as an example. There's a certain technique or something that you've done. Another friend of mine, Mark Gunn in Austin, does a similar thing. But maybe we can address this, or you can tell me and everybody how important this was in your overall marketing scheme or plan or approach, whatever you want to call it. But what you did early on is you, instead of just thinking of this thing as self-promotion, about only talking about you and your music, early on you created like a resource to promote your genre, and your genre is solo piano music. So, and I think that's evolved over the years, but you want to talk about that a little bit and how important that was to your success?
Yeah, it was hugely important. I mean, targeting your audience is a big part of having success online, because you have to get your music out in front of people. You have to put it where people are. You can't expect people to just come to your website. I mean, they're not going to just find you accidentally. I mean, they might, but you really need to be proactive and put your music out in front of where people are. So in the early years especially, this was a big part of my whole promotion strategy, which was, I'm a piano player and I write these, and I write music and sheet music and things of my songs. And I need to target people who would be interested in piano music. And so the obvious people, the first thing that came to mind is, you know, piano players. People who play the piano, amateur piano players who like George Winston and David Lawns and Jim Brickman and some of these guys, and who are in that style of music. I need to target piano players. I need to find these people. And, you know, there's a big website called pianoworld.com that was like one of the first very obvious places to get it involved in, because it's the biggest website, and it was back then too. It was like really one of the first places where you could go and find anything out about pianos, and there were forums where people were talking to each other. So getting involved there and then creating a website. I had this website called Piano Forte. I don't run it anymore, but back in the late 90s, it was a big part of how I promoted my music. I created a website that was designed to attract piano players. You know, I talk about piano lessons online, talk about tuning, I talk about how to get over performance anxiety. I'd have links to places where people could find sheet music and all these different things targeting piano players. And then they'd come to my website, they'd discover it, they'd be, you know, doing a search on the internet for something piano related, and they would find my website and then come. And then once they're at my website, that would be where I would really introduce them to my music. I'd have my album as a featured album, and they could click and listen to a sample. And that's kind of how I got started, by targeting that specific audience.
Wow. It was actually other musicians who did the similar thing. That's an interesting approach. I know a lot of jazz players or people in certain genres, people that are maybe would lend themselves to being a teacher too. I guess that would work out for them. But that's a pretty smart move.
Well, I think anybody can target. I think everybody's got it. I mean, if you're going to do any marketing online, you have to have some idea of who your target person is and what they're interested in. And then, you know, get your music out in front of them. And it seems like, you know, that's something we're not really past the age of search engines, but it kind of feels like it, because everything's kind of moved on to Facebook and social networking and everything. But search engines are still a big part of, you know, being found. And I think through both social marketing and through being involved with discussion groups and news groups and chat rooms and all this stuff, and then search engine positioning, I think all kind of goes together just to make it easier for people to find you and to get your music into places where you know that people who tend to like your kind of music are going to be hanging out.
Right. And you said it early on, yeah, you focused on attracting and creating resources for piano players, but then eventually where did the whisperings, you eventually got to the point where you were created something that attracted fans of solo piano music, right?
Right, and that, yes, Whisperings Solo Piano Radio is an internet radio broadcast that I started in 2003, and that came as a result of simply being, it was really, they say, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and that's really kind of what it was I wanted to get my music out there on the radio, but there were not a lot of terrestrial radio stations that were playing my music. And I think this could be really said for anybody. I mean, there's not a lot of terrestrial radio stations that are playing independent music in general. And for me, I didn't have anywhere to send my music. They were playing solo piano music exclusively and in my style. And so I just opted to create my own radio station. And so that's what I did. And I started Whispering Solo Piano Radio in 2003. I started it through the Live 365 website, and it was just a solo piano radio station, all solo piano music, and of course I would be the featured artist. You know, I didn't have just my own music on there because I knew that nobody would probably want to tune in and just hear me 24/7. So I got other piano players involved and created a regular rotation and of piano music, and the station got really popular really fast. It was the number one broadcast on Live365.com for like 4 years running. And so again, it was very, very popular, and I'm still running that, and it's we just had last week a record number of listeners on the show. So
wow.
It's still doing really well, and it's great because we've got 208 piano players now on the broadcast. It's a global thing, and my fee, if you can call it that, is that I arrange the playlist rotation so that one of my songs plays every hour. So I get hourly play on my own radio station that people come in to listen to. Probably 60,000 a day tune in to this radio station. And so these people are hearing my music every day on a regular basis, as well as a bunch of other artists. But, you know, obviously that's been a benefit to me too.
Yeah, but I love that concept because there's so many angles to it. One, it's you're creating, again, knowing, especially early in an artist's career, people aren't out searching for the name of that artist, but they could be searching for the genre. They could
right.
be searching for other more popular, well-known artists in that genre. So if you create a resource where people are just seeking out that type of music, which is totally attracting your ideal type of fan, then you're attracting more people. But also, I imagine there is a benefit to the goodwill that you're creating with those other artists, especially if they're above you in their career status. You become on their radars and maybe end up becoming friends with them and collaborating with them. Has that happened for you as well?
Yeah, it has. As a result of Whisperings Radio, I mean, that's been one of the cool things about it. When I started the radio broadcast, one of my goals with it wasn't just that it would be a radio station. I really wanted it to be a community effort. I wanted it to be a group of artists that would get together and hang out and network and even perform together. And that's really what it's turned into. I mean, it wasn't but about 2 years after we started the radio broadcast that we had our first Whisperings concert. And so there were, you know, we played the first show, we had a weekend, and we played two nights, and I think we had seven pianists total that came and played and participated over the two nights. It was really cool. It was just a great opportunity to network and hang out with other like-minded people. But then as the show got bigger, I got to play with, invite and play concert performances with some of my own piano heroes. I mean, David Lawns, who is probably the second most well-known piano player out there after probably George Winston. I've played probably a dozen shows with him now, and, you know, through the Whisperings radio broadcast. And so I played with him and Suzanne Ciani. I played with Peter Keeter. I played with Wayne Gratz. Just a lot of great, great piano players, some of which are well known. And you know, what a treat that's been. It's just so cool that I can kind of book and create concerts that feature some of my own heroes.
So do you think it's as a result of the of what you did with Whisperings that led to those connections and those?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because the initial concerts that I played with all those folks were through Whisperings, so they were Whisperings concerts.
Wow, so that's a great. It's funny. I don't know whether I have a Berkeley class I did for Berkeley College of Music, an online course called Music Marketing 101, and quite often there's a lot of young people or, you know, ambitious people pursuing a career, whether it's in management or as an artist or whatever. And some of the early lessons I ask about, like, the drawbacks of being indie, and they always talk about, oh, the lack of money is going to hold me back, lack of connections, you know. But everybody, I mean, if you think about it, but everyone starts there, not, you know, so you, everyone has to build their connection and their relationships with people. Because you, David Lanz, he never heard of you when you first started this out. But
oh no, no, that's for sure.
Yeah, but over just by staying at it and by being helpful and offering, not just coming to him for a handout and going, hey, can you plug me or can I play? Can I open for you? You were giving him something and kind of with that pay it forward or whatever you call it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it wasn't coming to him and saying, hey, can you help me out necessarily? It's just like, hey, we're doing this concert and this is what's going on. Actually, David Lanz was fantastic because he was so encouraging of what, you know, the Whisperings idea and what we were doing to start with. I mean, I think for him and for Wayne Gratz and some of these other guys that were huge artists in the days of Narada and Wyndham Hill when they were it in the 80s and the early 90s, you know, as those labels kind of came and went and that piano style kind of disappeared as it became kind of saturated and overmarketed and then kind of turned into this whole new agey thing and then people lost interest in it. But for those artists, you know, they were looking for other opportunities to, you know, find new fans and kind of create a new niche because, you know, Wyndham Hill is gone now and Narada is gone, basically. I mean, they don't really exist as independent labels anymore. And so
that doesn't mean the fan base is gone or the opportunities are
exactly
are gone.
And that's really what I'm trying to tune into is there's a lot of people who love that style of music, but you just can't, it's just harder and harder to find it, you know, aside from the obligatory yearly Wyndham Hill Christmas sampler that they put out, which is, you know, just somebody at a large label just trying to kind of cash in on that name and the brand. And so, you know, it's been great, a great opportunity to fill a void, really, with the Whisperings radio thing, with the solo piano market.
Right. Let me ask you about this angle of marketing and how you've dealt with this in your own career. Because a lot of marketing is about creating awareness, just getting people to notice you, you know, in a crowded marketplace. And we've talked about some of those things and how you created this resource for the genre and promoted other better-known artists, and that way people, fans of the genre, found you or discovered you. But there's that next step that eludes a lot of people, and it's like, how do you then connect with those people, communicate with them and turn them into fans, and then convert them into paying customers? Do you have any ways, whether it's a mailing list, is there anything you did with your website? How did you convert that attention, I guess, into a real relationship that led to a financial transaction, I guess?
Okay, so I'm going to end the public version of my interview with David there. We go on to talk about a lot of other cool stuff about how he's been able to make a living as an independent musician for the past 10 years. So again, if you want to gain access to that and a lot of other benefits for members, go to thebuzzfactor.com and look for the Music Marketing Mentorship Program link. And I've got a lot of other great interviews coming up in future months. I'm going to be interviewing Jack and Natalie from Pomplamoose. They were a YouTube sensation and are created quite a buzz as a music duo doing videos. I'm also going to be interviewing author Joe Vitale. He's Man, he's got a ton of books out. He was in the movie The Secret. He's known for something called hypnotic marketing and hypnotic writing. And I'm really looking forward to speaking with Joe. I should make that available in March. So there's a lot of cool stuff inside the music marketing mentorship programs. We're having a great time. We have monthly mastermind conference calls. A lot of different levels, a lot of different price points to choose from. So I highly recommend that you take a look and at least consider it, because we're having a great time and we'd love for you to join us. So thanks for listening. I'm Bob Baker. Until next time, I hope you're having a great day, a great week, and much success to you and your creative endeavors. So long for now.